Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Sunday, July 12th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news, as starting pitcher Nick Lodolo was placed on the 15-day IL with a finger blister. The blister is back, which explains his issues in his last start. Lodolo missed the first month of the season with the same blister issue on his finger, and it prevented him from finding a rhythm when he finally did return. I would say if you have limited IL spots in fantasy, I'd probably be dropping Nick Lodolo at this point. Reliever Chase Petty was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but Rhett Lauder is likely to rejoin the rotation in the second half to replace Lodolo as a starting pitcher. Next, relief pitcher Chris Martin was placed on the 15-day IL with a shoulder impingement. Martin just cannot stay healthy. This is his third separate IL stint of the year. And when you get this late into your career, Martin, I think, is 40 years old, or 39, 40, or 41. He's around there. He's ancient for a baseball player. And at this point in his career, he just cannot stay healthy. I wouldn't be surprised if this is his last season in the majors. The corresponding move for Martin's IL placement is a little bit exciting, as reliever Emiliano Teodo was recalled from the minors. He is the Rangers' number 17 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, and he's been talked about as the Rangers' closer of the future for a few years now, even dating back to when he was a starting pitcher, because he doesn't have good control, and that always suggested, all right, Teodo's destined to be in the bullpen, but his stuff is so good that he's also destined to be a closer. And that's probably less likely now with the emergence of Jacob Latz this year, but Teodo looked awesome at AAA with a 3.76 ERA and a 28% strikeout rate. And that would be dope if he could only control his elite stuff, but he's had a 19% walk rate this year as well as last year. So Teodo is going to be somebody that comes up with incredible stuff, strikeout potential, but he will be battling himself from in every outing because he just cannot control his stuff. But there's certainly a lot of potential with Emiliano Teodo. Next, we have relief pitcher William Kempner, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an elbow sprain. He is on the Marlins. This is not great news, as is any elbow-related injury for a pitcher. And this is another blow to a promising Marlins reliever, as he joins Anthony Bender, Josh Eknes, Ronnie Henriquez, John King, and Andrew Nardi on the injured list. You got a whole slew of high upside relievers on that Marlins IL. So hopefully by next year, you'll have them all at full strength. And honestly, the Marlins might have one of the best bullpens in baseball, which is not something I think many people are keyed in on at the moment. Reliever Dax Fulton was recalled for the minors to replace Kempner. And lastly, starting pitcher Zach Gallen was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. Gallen has been one of the worst pitchers in the majors this year, recording a 6.34 ERA and a 1.56 whip with a meager 14% strikeout rate across 19 starts. And he took a step back last year with a 4.83 ERA, 1.26 whip, and a 22% strikeout rate. But that's not nearly as bad as what he's doing this year. So it makes sense that Gallen would be dealing with some sort of arm injury. And as with all elbow injuries, Gallen could be due for an extended absence. And considering his performance this year, I'm sure the Diamondbacks won't rush him back. With Gallen, Michael Soroka, and Ryan Nelson on the IL, the Arizona rotation is in shambles. To supplement that rotation, starting pitcher Mitch Bratt was recalled from the minors to start in LA against the Dodgers on Sunday. He tossed three innings, allowing three hits and 3 earned runs, walking three while fanning nobody, inducing one whiff with 9% CSW across 58 pitches. Bratt got a chance to establish himself as an option to fill one of the open rotation spots, but he was given this tough matchup against the Dodgers and limited to 54 pitches and 3 frames in his MLB debut in late June. Bratt was once again prevented from exceeding 60 pitches and a trio of innings. It did not help at all that he also fanned nobody, induced just one whiff, and recorded 9% CSW. You were not hearing things wrong when I first said that. 0 strikeouts, 1 whiff, 9% CSW. That's terrible. And on top of that, Bratt's usage suggests that the club doesn't really view him as a long-term solution for their rotation issues. Expect Brandon Pfaadt to stick in the rotation for a while, but we're likely to see maybe some outside of the organization supplements to the rotation if the Diamondbacks consider themselves contenders, or some minor league guys getting called up. We could see Jose Cabrera coming back, which is the first name that comes to my mind. In terms of transactions, first baseman Abimelech Ortiz was recalled from the minors. He's the Nationals' number 25 prospect, and if you recognize the name, that's because he was part of the return from the Rangers in the Mackenzie Gore trade back in January. Ortiz is a 24-year-old left-handed batter. At AAA, he batted .235 with 16 homers and a 107 WRC+, which doesn't sound very inspiring, but there's clear raw power with Abimelech Ortiz as he showcased a 116 mile per hour max exit velocity and a 14% barrel rate, which are both elite numbers if you can carry that over into the majors. Ortiz entered the lineup at DH and batted third in his MLB debut, so there seems to be some confidence from the Nationals in Ortiz, but he's likely to be limited against left-handed pitchers in a platoon at DH with Andrés Chaparro. The power potential for Ortiz could be worth chasing in deep leagues, though. Reliever Matt Crook was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Zach Thornton was recalled from the minors to start for the Mets against the Red Sox. He tossed 7 shutout innings, allowing just 2 hits and 2 walks while striking out 5, inducing 9 whiffs with 29% CSW across 82 pitches, which is an impressive feat against the Red Sox, who've been on fire recently and have crushed southpaws all year. Thornton threw 85% four-seamers and cutters. The four-seamer has great rise at 18 to 19 inches of IVB, but at 92 miles per hour with 6.1 feet of extension and 0.5 HAVA, doesn't grade out too well. The cutter has inconsistent movement, and it's not likely to be a pitch that misses too many bats moving forward. I think Thornton was super lucky to get 16 outs on 18 balls in play, and this start earned him a spot in the second half rotation. It was announced by the club that Thornton pitched so well here that he will remain in the rotation as we enter the second half. But even still, I don't think Thornton is somebody that we need to target in standard leagues, maybe 15-team leagues and deeper. Reliever Tobias Myers was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, shortstop Braden Shoemake was traded by the Astros to the Brewers in exchange for cash considerations. We've got some trickling trades that have occurred over the past couple of weeks as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, one of my favorite times of the year. Honestly, this whole month might be my favorite month of the year. You get the playoff races start to shape up. You start seeing the season-long numbers start to come into form. And I think you also find who the real breakouts are this year and who are the fakers. You also get the home run derby and the all-star game and the trade deadline. There's just so much going on. You also get prospect call-ups because we're past the point where players can earn a year of playing time. So this is a really exciting time of the year in January or July, excuse me. But the Brewers acquired Braden Shoemake, and he started at the hot corner in his first game with Milwaukee, shifting Joey Ortiz to shortstop and forcing Cooper Pratt to the bench. But I'd expect Shoemake to be the one seeing the least playing time of that trio, as he's more of a utility infielder than a star shorts or star third baseman moving forward. Outfielder Greg Jones was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And lastly, starting pitcher Brian Bayo was recalled from the minors to pitch in bulk relief in Queens, tossing 4 1/3 innings, allowing 2 hits and 1 run, walking nobody while fanning 5. He induced 8 whiffs with 40% CSW across 55 pitches. And after struggling as a traditional starter prior to his demotion, I'm glad the Red Sox have come to their senses and sent Bayo out there after an opener. He leaned more heavily into sweepers and changeups, but until we see him with a longer leash, just 55 pitches and 4 1/3 innings here, we won't know if Bayo is truly fixed. For what it's worth, he did pitch to a 4.34 ERA in 4 minor league starts, which that doesn't really tell you much of anything, but that did come with a 27% strikeout rate and a 5% walk rate. That's a 22% strikeout minus walk rate. That's pretty impressive, and that suggests that Bayo might have figured something out. So we'll keep an eye on him in the second half. He should definitely contribute to this Red Sox rotation. And in terms of news, closing pitcher Ryan Helsley, who is currently out with elbow discomfort, he landed on the IL a little over a week ago. The news has come out that Helsley has no UCL ligament damage, just inflammation, so no surgery will be required for Ryan Helsley's elbow. However, he will not throw until August, so don't expect Helsley to return until the end of that month or in early September. So it's going to be a while until we see Ryan Helsley back with the Orioles. Expect Tyler Wells to be the guy to roster in that Baltimore bullpen. At the moment, we could see Rico Garcia reclaim that role that he held the first time Helsley spent time on the injured list. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with third baseman Alex Bregman, who helped the Cubs to a win in Cincinnati, going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, a double, a home run, and 4 runs batted in. It was his 9th home run of the year, and it traveled 387 feet at 102 miles per hour. And that's now back-to-back games with a home run for Bregman. In his first year in Chicago, Bregman is in the midst of his first below league average offensive campaign of his career, with a 93 WRC plus entering Sunday's action. So many of his underlying metrics suggest that he may continue to struggle as well. This is not just a blip of the poor first half. It's a poor first half, but it's not unlucky, I would say. From a Statcast perspective, Bregman's barrel rate is his lowest outside of the COVID-shortened 2020 campaign, and his expected WOBA is the lowest of his career, as well as his bat speed has fallen to a three-year low, and that's just technically the lowest of his career because we didn't have bat speed prior to 2 years ago. So Bregman not swinging as hard, not hitting the ball as hard, and his ex-WOBA is not good. From a plate discipline perspective, he's striking out more than he has since his first full season back in 2017, and his zone contact is the lowest of his career. So he's not making as much contact, and he's whiffing more than ever. And then from a batted ball perspective, Bregman's hitting more ground balls than usual, and his pop-ups are at a career high rate. So that's clearly he's not having great launch angle. He's not impacting the ball, finding the sweet spot consistently. I don't think that all of this can be blamed on a change of scenery to a park that doesn't necessarily suit Bregman's pulled fly ball approach. He's clearly gotten worse, and other than track record, there's nothing to point to that suggests the second half will be much better. Maybe if somebody comes trying to buy low on Bregman, I would be willing to give him up, especially in standard leagues. He's much better in points leagues. Next, we have outfielder Braden Montgomery, who helped the White Sox to win against the A's, going 2-for-4 with a run, a home run, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 3 homers now. The only one went 359 feet at 94 miles per hour. I'm so used to the multi-homer games, of which we had 0 on Sunday. But Montgomery earned a ton of attention after hitting a walk-off homer in his MLB debut about a month ago. It seemed to support his high prospect ranking, which not only stemmed from his 12th overall selection in the 2024 MLB draft, but it also an excellent slash line at AAA at just 23 years old. So high prospect ranking because of the high draft selection and his performance in the minors. And then that was completely supported, or it seemed as though it was completely supported, by an impressive performance in his MLB debut. Now entering his first MLB All-Star break with 29 games under his belt, what does Montgomery look like, and does he deserve to be rostered in fantasy? Well, he hasn't hit the ball hard like he did in the minors, with a 4% barrel rate that is not great, and he hasn't displayed the underlying metrics that usually indicate impressive raw power, such as a high max exit velocity or a high average bat speed. He also hasn't displayed the plate discipline that was his standout skill in the minors, where Montgomery was walking like 15% of the time. That's down to around 8% so far in the majors, but he's traded his patient approach for one that prioritizes contact. That would be great if he wasn't hitting so many ground balls. He's had a near 60% ground ball rate, which is just impossible to deal with. You're not going to find success like that. You think about guys like Yandy Diaz and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., guys who just hit too many ground balls, or even Cabrian Hayes, and just failed to break out. Obviously, Vladdy finally broke out, Yandy broke out, but Hayes did not, because he was never able to lift the ball. Right now, Montgomery is looking like one of those guys who struggles to hit the ball in the air. Mikel Garcia is also in that group. I'm building a team of guys who couldn't hit the ball in the air, but finally figured it out. I think Montgomery, at his age and with the potential that he's displayed in the past, he's going to figure it out. But if this were just a one-month outlier, I wouldn't put much stock into it. But Montgomery has run high ground ball rates throughout his time in the minors. It was only like a year and a half, so still small sample size, and there's obviously room for him to improve, room for him to finally start hitting the ball in the air like we've seen Vladdy and Yandy Diaz do. But he's going to need a couple of tweaks before he fully breaks out. And honestly, I think that's unlikely to occur this year. An unwillingness to steal is just the icing on the cake for a batter with a sub 700 OPS. And I'm okay rostering Montgomery in deep leagues with 5 outfielders, but he doesn't deserve a spot in standard leagues. Lastly, we have outfielder Jake McCarthy, who did all he could, but the Rockies lost in San Francisco. He went 1-for-3 with a run, a home run, an RBI, a walk, and a steal to complete the combo meal. It was his 10th home run and 15th stolen base of the season. The homer went 387 feet at 100 miles per hour. A cold April with limited playing time hid McCarthy's Colorado breakout. Since the beginning of May, he's been a top-tier fantasy contributor, batting 309 with all 10 of his homers and 8 stolen bases. As evidenced by a 50-point difference in his home road WRC+, this breakout has been completely driven by Coors. But McCarthy proved on Sunday that he doesn't need to be benched when he's on the road. The underlying metrics don't support the breakout in full, as McCarthy has never and doesn't hit the ball hard consistently at all. But he is swinging the bat faster, which suggests that he's got more raw power to tap into. And he's also hitting fewer ground balls than ever, which means more line drives and more fly balls that could end up over the fence. He is also being ultra aggressive at the plate, which I think is allowing him to maximize his speed and allowing him to maximize his contact ability, because I don't think he's somebody that you want getting deep into counts and whiffing and striking out a bunch. And it's honestly, it's working incredibly this year. This is usually a profile that I'll avoid in a fantasy draft. So like next offseason, I'm probably not going to be drafting Jake McCarthy, but it is one that I'll want to hold on to while everyone's clicking, while everything is clicking in Coors. It's giving me a little bit of like Brenton Doyle. You had that one breakout. Obviously, we've seen McCarthy do more than Doyle's done throughout his career, but even McCarthy playing for the Diamondbacks was struggling to maintain his major league roster spot. So next year, probably not going to be drafting him. But for right now, I'm totally fine holding McCarthy. I don't want to sell high. I don't want to buy high. I don't want to, you know, change anything up. I'm just going to hold on to McCarthy and be grateful that he's batting over 300 with 10 homers and 15 steals entering the All-Star break. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Sunday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Zach Wheeler, who helped the Phillies to win in Detroit, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing just 2 hits and 2 walks while striking out 10. He induced 19 whiffs with 32% CSW across 96 pitches, and Wheeler made one final first half statement after being snubbed from the All-Star game. He fanned double-digit batters for the third consecutive start, raising his season-long strikeout rate north of 30% to go with his 2.13 ERA and 0.89 whip, which look absolutely gorgeous next to his 10-1 record. That's insane. 10-1, near 2 ERA, sub 0.9 whip, and a 30% strikeout rate. Wheeler is looking like a peak again. This is peak Wheeler, which in my mind makes him the number 2 starter in baseball. He was my number 1 starter ahead of the 2025 campaign entering that season. I had him above Skeens and Scooble because of his track record. And speaking of Scooble, he faced Wheeler in this one, and he did all he could, but the Tigers lost to the Phillies. Scooble tossed 5 innings, allowing 4 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out 5. He induced 20 whiffs with 29% CSW across 93 pitches, and Scooble tied for the gallows pole by tying for the lead in baseball with those 20 whiffs. And Scooble was outdueled by Wheeler, but he put on a show of his own, and it should have come with a ton more strikeouts as well. But a 38% put away rate in 2 strike counts led to extended at bats and a high reliance on outs on balls in play, which led to a pair of runs and a hook after 93 pitches through 5 innings. Regardless, I think it's fair to say that Tarek Skubal is back. He's induced at least 20 whiffs in 3 of his last 4 starts, and that's elite. And you're probably wondering who else racked up 20 whiffs yesterday. That would be Joey Cantillo, who helped the Guardians to win in Miami, tossing 5 innings, allowing 6 hits and 1 run, walking 2 while striking out 9. He induced 20 whiffs with 44% CSW across 85 pitches, and he earned the golden goal by tying for the lead in whiffs for the gallows pole with those 20 whiffs, and he earned the King Cole by leading baseball with a 44% CSW. And this new look Joey Cantillo is dope. Since turning his fastball velocity up to 93 miles per hour, emphasizing curveballs and incorporating a new cutter, Cantillo has truly broken out. In 6 starts since he started doing that, he's pitched to a 1.59 ERA with a 30% strikeout rate, averaging 15 whiffs and 36% CSW per start during that time. And what's cool about his start on Sunday is that all of those positive changes stuck around, and his signature changeup still led the way with 11 whiffs and 55% CSW, giving him plenty of weapons to dominate both left-handed and right-handed batters. All we need is for Cantillo to find some more efficiency so we can become a consistent quality start producer moving forward. Speaking of inefficiency, Shane Boz helped the Orioles to win against the Royals, tossing 4 2/3 innings, allowing 7 hits and 1 run, walking nobody while striking out 9. He induced 19 whiffs with 28% CSW across 104 pitches. And Boz carried over the exceptional command he had in his last start. He kept four seamers upstairs as they induced 7 whiffs, and he could have had more if not for 15 foul balls off the heater. Boz also dotted curveballs low and glove side for 6 whiffs and 36% CSW, as well as avoiding the heart of the zone with sinkers and cutters while keeping most of his changeups low and arm side. This command should propel Boz to more success than we've seen. It was a very poor quality start with just 3 strikeouts in his last start. And while this one came with 9 strikeouts via 19 whiffs, Boz failed to complete the 5th frame. I'm willing to blame the ridiculous 538 BABIP he was forced to deal with and the focus on getting strikeouts for his inefficiency and his failure to complete the 5th. I'm also willing to say that entering the All-Star break, this is the most confident I felt in Boz all year. Let's hope he can carry over the feel for his arsenal into the second half. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Paul Blackburn had a perfect 6-out save, his first of the year, as David Bednar was unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days. Jacob Webb got the final 2 outs of the game for his 5th save. Garrett Whitlock recorded his 2nd save with a perfect 10th. Aroldis Chapman pitched a scoreless 9th in a tie game to earn his first win. Andrew Morris pitched a scoreless 6-out save, his 3rd of the year. I have no idea where Yoandrés Gomez was in this one for the Twins, but maybe they're resting him heading into the All-Star break. Raisel Iglesias recorded his 19th save with a perfect 9th. Paul Sewald also pitched a perfect 9th for his 22nd save, and Mason Miller recorded his National League leading 25th save with a perfect 9th. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Devin Williams allowed 2 runs, one of which was earned to blow his 3rd save. The Mets would go on to lose in 10 innings. Andrés Muñoz pitched a hitless 9th, up by 6. He hadn't pitched since last Tuesday, so this was likely a maintenance outing entering the All-Star break for Andrés Muñoz. Pete Fairbanks served up a solo shot, pitching the 9th up by 4 after the Marlins added on an insurance run in the top half to ruin Fairbanks' save chance. Cade Smith served up a solo shot, pitching the 9th down by 3. Jacob Latz pitched the 9th in a tie game and earned his 2nd win when the Rangers walked it off against Josh Hader, who allowed 3 hits and a run to take his first loss. And lastly, Tanner Scott pitched a perfect 8th down by 1. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's action, we're going to take a quick break. Now look forward to Monday, July 13th, where we'll have a empty slate of no games. And that's because we are entering the All-Star break. Luckily, Monday is one of my favorite days of the year. We got the Home Run Derby in Citizens Bank Park. The field is set. I'm going to run through it because that's really all we have to look forward to. It's the All-Star game on Tuesday. And then we get a day of break on Wednesday and just one game on Thursday before we return to action on Friday. So we're going to have no podcast for the next few days. Carson will be back with you on Thursday, but right now we can focus on the Home Run Derby. Kyle Schwarber is the home run leader in baseball this year, and it's awesome to say that he is in the Home Run Derby. 32 home runs for Kyle Schwarber this year. We'll also see Ben Rice with 29 home runs on the season. Junior Caminero, who's been incredible over the last month, he's up to 28 home runs. Jordan Walker will be in it as well. He's got 22 home runs. Wilson Contreras at 20 homers is in it as well. Bryce Harper in Citizens Bank Park. We got 2 Phillies, both Schwarber and Harper. Harper's got 20 homers. And Munetaka Murakami was the last entrant. He's got 20 homers. And then the lowest home run total, but maybe the most raw power, Jack Caglione is in at 15 home runs on the year. I'm really excited for this field. You have some very well-known names in Harper and Schwarber that are going to be, you know, I don't want to say there for the casual fans, but it's cool that they are, you know, on the Phillies. They're playing at home. Schwarber is the major league home run leader. That's awesome. Harper's won a home run derby before for his home team when he won it for the Nationals a few years ago. So I think the Schwarber-Harper story is cool. Ben Rice is having just an incredible breakout year, which is key for the Yankees and also maybe key for MLB as they want the Yankees to be good. But with Aaron Judge out, Giancarlo Stanton injured, Ben Rice is that big bopper that the Bronx Bombers need. And he's been incredible this year. I cannot believe he's at 29 home runs. So it's going to be exciting to see what he can do as well. Junior Caminero, I think, is and a very exciting one. I'm pretty sure he was in it last year, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm wrong. I think I do remember because I remember there was a viral clip of him on the stage. I don't remember what it was, but I remember him coming up from the bottom of the stage and then emerging from the top. It'll be interesting to see a guy with braces maybe winning the home run derby. That would be super cool. But Caminero is looking like one of the premier power threats in baseball recently. Jordan Walker has had this incredible breakout this year, which frustrates me because I traded him in my home league back in May, thinking that I was, you know, being really smart, getting ahead of the game, but that is not the case. He's just continued to do super well. So I'm excited to see what he can do to show off his raw power. Wilson Contreras is having one of the best offensive seasons of his career. This one, he's probably the guy I'm least excited about, especially after all the chaos he created over the past couple of weeks when he was sort of arguing with everybody, trying to pick a bunch of fights. And he was honestly on the receiving end of some guys doing some out-of-pocket stuff. But Wilson Contreras, you know, he'll be there. And I would be surprised if he won, just considering he's not exciting. Munetaka Murakami, though, he is exciting. I'm glad he returned to health just in time to be able to perform in this event. I think he would have been near 30 home runs at this point if he hadn't missed the last month with a hamstring strain. But Murakami has incredible power, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And then Caglione, he hits the ball as hard as anyone. He hits it as far as anyone. He's going to be, I think he's the youngest player in this field. Jordan Walker is really young as well. Caminero is really young too. I should have done more research on ages of these players, but regardless, Caglione is the least experienced of this group. This is his first full season, least experienced in the majors, that is, because Murakami is in his rookie season as well. But Caglione honestly excites me the most just because he's the type of guy who he doesn't have the raw power that usually translates into games that often because he strikes out and all the other stuff. But he's the type of guy that could go into one of these tournaments and have that huge breakout like Josh Hamilton style. I think Josh Hamilton was already a well-known name when he did what he did at Yankee Stadium. But with the new format for the Home Run Derby, I think Caglione could break into the, you know, mainstream fantasy consciousness, mainstream baseball consciousness for baseball fans. So I'm excited for this Home Run Derby. It is like the one event of the year where I invite friends over to watch stuff. I'm usually the type of guy who goes to somebody else's house for the Super Bowl or that kind of stuff, to watch the World Series. The Home Run Derby, though, I'm the guy who hosts the Home Run Derby. So if you want to come on down, hit me up on Twitter or whatever, and maybe I got some room for you here in my tiny little apartment for the Home Run Derby. But I'm pumped. Let me know who you guys think is going to win the Home Run Derby. I think I'm going to put my money on, I think Caglione. I think, you know, fewest home runs, he's the underdog. That seems like the most exciting guy. So super pumped for the Home Run Derby, but that's all we have on Monday. And that's all we have for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player card. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. Actually, not tomorrow. Like I said, we are off on the next 3 days, but Carson Picard will be with you on Thursday and throughout next weekend. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Let's talk about baseball.